Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Ben.
How's it going?
Good.
It's all right.
This is a slightly earlier recording than usual, so yeah. By the time we discuss the various things we're going to discuss today, they might all have been debunked.
Yeah.
None of them might be true anymore. We're recording on a Wednesday. Which is...
Every single thing we're recording is a conspiracy theory today.
Currently, it could be viewed as a conspiracy theory when it releases. But it's flipping Zelda mania out there, and that is going to dominate discussion today on this podcast. You cannot get away from it.
I muted it, and I still see it.
Really?
I have to mute things that I didn't even know had anything to do with Zelda.
Muted Totka?
Yeah, and I had to mute Korok because it was like all the seeds. And yeah. I mean, I know everyone's talking about it and everyone's enjoying it, but I'm not playing it and I don't have any opinions about it and I don't want to see it anymore. I'm sick of it.
I've not actually been like fed that much of it by the algorithm. I've seen stuff that like my actual friends have shared, you know, because that's just going to come up. But like in terms of suggestions and things, I've not seen... A great deal of that.
I thought I came up with a killer tweet last night and it had already been done. I was devastated. But I did one of those things where I put the tweet out into the world and went, that's a good tweet.
I liked it.
And I went to bed. Thank you.
Oh, I didn't see it.
It's okay. It's
fake
rubbish.
Fake friend.
And then I came into work today and someone replied and said, here's a far more popular version of this tweet. And I was like, you son of a...
I'd be really upset if someone did that to me. I think I'd delete my whole tweet. I'd be like, nope.
No, I decided to keep it up. It was the way that the person corrected me. They did follow me. They didn't do it in like a nasty
like
way.
You
like
copied.
You stole it. Sort of like, because I did the, it was the, you know, the Simpsons barbecue. Why doesn't mine look like that?
Oh, yeah.
Build that. I thought, oh my God, that's very apt to literally everything I've built in Zelda so far. So I just took like a screenshot of someone's crazy creation and then.
The one with the penis.
I think that's why I might have seen that this morning on my feed and thought it was the one that I'd already seen. But just like a video, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a video version.
Wasn't it posted on Slack?
I don't know.
I'm sure I've seen it, posted in our office and you missed it entirely.
I had no idea. So someone replied and said, now in video form, which is like, I think a fairly respectful way of letting me know. But I did, rubbish, right?
Right.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, well,
it's a bit of parallel invention, except the invention came several days after the superior version.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, it's a great game, and we're going to talk all about it in several forms. I think we need to catch people up on a little party that happened at Ashton Mathis House over the weekend.
My Eurovision party.
Yeah.
Did you guys have a nice time?
Had a great, fantastic time.
Good. Yeah. I'm so glad. It was jam-packed full of people. I didn't say goodbye to anyone.
No.
Because my cats ran out the back doors. Someone let my cats out.
All the taxis arrived at the same time.
All the taxis arrived early and at the same time. So everyone just left the house. Mm. And then I came back in after trying to look for my cats. And it was just Peter and Amy there. And I was like, where's everybody gone?
Where to go? Yeah, it was such a shame because it was a real, real abrupt end. Mm. And as much as Eurovision was the reason that we were all there, it felt like... Increasingly, as the evening went on and everyone got more and more wasted, that it became a backdrop for just a lovely social gathering.
Yeah.
It's been ages. I don't think I've been to like a house party for the longest time, but it's almost turned into a house party in the end. Mm. And everyone was just hanging out and chatting to each other. It was great.
Ashton, then your carbon monoxide alarm went off after the party. I'm curious now, maybe there was a genuine carbon monoxide leak because we were not still there after everyone had left. And you think that you came back from the cats. No, we left sort of just after the first batch of people while the second batch of people were still there.
Oh.
Did you have a ghost?
To be fair, I don't really remember anything that happened.
No, you were...
From a certain point onwards.
You'd enjoyed yourself.
I was pretty drunk. Yeah. And then apparently me and my boyfriend had an argument and I had no recollection of it at all. And also neither of us slept in our bed that night. I'd fallen asleep in the spare room and he'd fallen asleep on the sofa because the cats sat on him. So I woke up in the spare room like, where am I? What's going on? Came downstairs and I was like, why is Ben on the sofa? And so he slept on the sofa. So we went back upstairs and no one had slept in our bed because we'd both just fallen asleep in different locations in the house.
Excellent. Wow,
that's nice.
Yeah.
It was a real night.
I had a good night.
Yeah.
No one threw up in my house, which was a big
worry.
Yeah,
that was really good, actually.
Everyone stayed there till they got home.
Bought a Switch.
Yeah.
That was very funny.
So drunk, he bought a Switch.
And then tried to return it and Amazon said no. So now he's got another Switch. And
Ashton Ashton was worried for the first sort of 45 minutes that I wasn't having a good time.
He was just being so French.
Repeatedly asked. I was dressed as a Frenchman. As soon as we'd walked in to sit down and watch Eurovision, my wife had gone and sat next to Ashton and there were no seats around, so she just sort of abandoned me. I was like, that's fine, I go and sit on that sofa there. And I was just
I can already hear in my head Amy refuting that abandoned.
hang on I went and sat next to my friend Ashton, that's all.
But it's because both Peter was sat like I have a corner sofa and the telly was like here and Peter was kind of sat like looking into the room. So all I could see when I was watching Eurovision in my peripheral was just Peter just kind of sat there and I was like,
he's like when a wrestler watches the match backstage, just sort of like at an angle, you just sort of look at your shoulder.
It was like I didn't care if anyone else having a good time, but because I could see Peter, I was like, oh, I wonder if Peter's having a good time.
Well, eventually the seating moved around and I went and joined Ashton and Amy. And I think at that point you were assured I was having a good time.
And then Jack and Bethany were protecting the jelly shots with their lives because someone had started snaffling them in the kitchen.
Really?
Someone cracked them early. Yeah,
and that really upset Jack and Bethany. So they were like holding on to them with like a great, they were like, no one's getting one. And I was like, okay, well, now we're going to give them out. So get ready to give them out.
Need to share them.
Yeah.
It was a great night. It was a lot of fun. Night. We should do it again at some time, by which I mean, at your house.
You should
have people around to your house.
Okay,
well,
you need to convince my boyfriend because he was like, never again. Especially because the next day when I was potentially not at my best, he was trying to get me to help tidy up. He was like, come on, let's do this. And I was like, no. So I was just moving from various different places, like lying on the floor, then lying on the sofa. Then he was like, take the bunting down. And I'd taken half the bunting down and I was now lying on
the
sofa.
And that's it, that's enough.
I said, we could just leave the bunting up. And he said, no, we can't. And I was like, but the Eurovision will be again next year.
Just leave it up.
It'll be around again before you know it.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, wonderful. Each and every week on this is a video game podcast, I promise.
Not a Eurovision podcast.
Not a Eurovision podcast yet. Maybe soon. We're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. I can't see. Is Dead Island 2 the spider in here?
He was up there.
We spotted him over there last week, but
moved around.
Found a different corner. Maybe.
Can't see him today, but he'll be about. Peter, I believe you have the ad read in front of you. Is that correct?
I do. Can I just point out on, I think I've deleted it off my notes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. Did it say Ashton?
It did say Ashton at the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, and I fixed it online.
I have just recently received in my mind.
Yes.
Today's sponsor.
That's so exciting.
It says your name at the top, though.
It does say it at the top, but I missed that and I read it at the bottom and then didn't prepare. I didn't bring along the one that has now arrived in my inbox.
your mental inbox.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that Nintendo are bringing out a game alongside Insomniac, who make the Spider-Man games? It's one of those anti-hero games where you actually follow the villain, and it's meant to like add a bit of heart, a bit of emotion to someone who is currently misunderstood. It's out last week. It came out last week.
Oh, okay.
Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingpin.
Oh,
he's
no.
He's crying all the time.
So sad.
That's very sad.
In Hyrule, apparently, it's a Legend of Zelda game.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And he's just there.
He's just there.
Crying.
Ginormous.
In the art style or like just a man?
The world, everything else is in the art style, but he is a more photorealistic looking big bald man.
Right, okay.
And that's partly maybe why he's so sad, because he just doesn't fit in.
What's he going to do?
cry
that's
about it.
Really sad.
Oh, I'm also receiving the fact that it's a lie.
Oh man.
I made it up just
so
then.
So you haven't got like telekinesis?
No, that's not.
Or is it telepathy?
That's part of the conspiracy.
Telepathy.
Telepathy, yeah.
Telekinesis is
the moving things with your mind. Yeah. You haven't got
brain
that either.
Powers. No.
Maybe.
Or have I?
We'll have to find out later. No, we're not sponsored by Tears of the Kingpin. We, of course, sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/team/triplejump, where if you support us there, and what am I trying to say?
For instance, $1 a month, you can ask questions on this very podcast.
In a circle.
It's all right. Ben's going on holiday tomorrow.
And then just talked over you while you were
just
doing the correct one.
Richard Major.
It's not that one. Yes, it is that one. Please go there to the Patreon. I'm just going to be quiet.
Just like Richard Major, who says, "Hi, BAP. New news is circulating that GTA 6 has a budget of $2 billion. For some reference, official figures list that Star Citizen is the... at $500 million and Cyberpunk 2077 as the next most expensive game release, costing $331 million.
Quick one. Is Star Citizen the one that has like never come out?
Yeah, it's been in like early access.
Right, okay, cool.
Kind of stuff,
And those figures are adjusted to 2021 dollars, he says. With a budget of $2 billion, what could they be doing? Will they be using this budget to playtest the game so hard that it's launched in a bug-free state from day one?
No,
definitely not. That's not where that money's going to go. Will it be packed full of microtransactions to help it make that money back?
Maybe.
And with so much money on the line, will they be able to be as edgy as before? When you're the biggest game in the world, can you afford to take the risks which made GTA what it is? What do you think? Enjoy your Hollyplops. Ben Love, Richard. Ben, love Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
Richard, fear not. I have some figures here. GTA 5 made $7.7 billion from sales alone.
Goodness.
That doesn't include anything from GTA Online.
No shark cards?
No shark cards. I couldn't find the running total figure for GTA Online, but I did find a stat that said it makes $800 million yearly. So basically $1 billion a year.
Hang on, it says here, big. It says big here. Yeah. And that's all we know.
Bigly. So $2 billion, in a way, doesn't actually sound that risky at all to me.
No.
I don't think they're going to have to be that careful. It sounds like a lot of money.
It's a lot of money on a game.
It is.
Like, but considering the next most is Star Citizen.
Yeah. But equally, I don't think there's actually that much risk that they're not just going to easily make it back. So they probably sat down and said, look how much money we printed from GTA 5. We can just spend however much we want now on GTA 6. And, you know, assuming we don't completely mess up, it will probably be fine. Yeah. I don't know what the stats are for like Red Dead Redemption 2, for example, because that was, you know, a game with huge scale.
Red Dead Online, popular. Yeah. So much to do in there. Yeah. A lot of soup to carry across the country.
Carry all that soup. So I don't think Rockstar are probably as worried as any other company might be if they were spending $2 billion on the development of a game. I can't speak for them, but looking at the stats, it looks like not much of a
I'm just imagining like this skyscraper just full of devs just coding away because they can afford like $2 billion worth of devs. And there's just loads of them just coding away on like various little things, like little worker monkeys. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because you could maybe be like, well, they're going to use this money to pay their workers correctly.
Yeah.
And give everyone the time and the money that they deserve.
Good joke, Ashton. Good
I know, exactly. It's such a funny story.
What if we bring
funny
more
story.
Developers
what if we paid
and make them
everyone?
Work twice as hard?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's interesting to know, like, if this is actually true, because I don't know if it's been confirmed as fact or if it's just a rumor.
The source that I found that all the articles were writing about was just someone who tweeted it.
Right.
Cool.
That's it.
And that's fact.
That's that, and so many places have picked the book. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there is an insane development cost involved with this game, but it is several fold higher than
the most expensive.
Than the most
previously.
And to be fair, the tweet did say 1 to 2 billion, so it's not necessarily 2 billion is probably the extreme end of the scale. But Yeah, I don't know how true this is or verifiable this is, but it's going to be an expensive game. Yeah.
Maybe like a bunch of that money's just had to go on the fact that they've had to restart the game because of all the leaks and all of that.
Oh, I hope
nightmare.
Not.
No,
scrap it. Do it again.
Do it again.
You can't go to your child's birthday party.
Yeah.
Get back in
the
cellar.
Here's your 10p. Get back to work. And I mean, I don't know if the money will affect how edgy it's going to be. I think if they're going to spend $2 billion on a game, they could probably afford to do whatever they want.
If anything, they might lean into it to try and like make certain that they make the money back.
But I don't know if I really want that. I don't know if we need to lean further into it.
No.
I think GTA 5 is like right on the cusp, and we can leave it there, and we don't have to go any further. That's all right.
This is going to be an interesting one. Especially for edginess, because lest we forget, Dan Houser, who's been like longtime big boy Rockstar man, who wrote, I think, all of the games, almost certainly was involved in some of the development of this game. But he left Rockstar in March of 2020. This is going to be the first it's going to be the first Rockstar game that he hasn't been involved in some way, or at least been at the studio for. And so they're going to be shepherding this game through the doors without his oversight for potentially the first time ever.
Yeah.
And as the guy who wrote, you know, the torture scene that we all love so much, and Trevor, who's like so funny.
Best character of all
How is this game going to look? How is it going to feel? And while GTA 5 was extremely popular, you have to imagine a lot of those sales were down to GTA Online, which they did ultimately release separately. But like, that's a big part of it too. So what is this game going to look like? Because while, yes, the budget would potentially go to like creating this amazing, beautiful open world, there's a good chance that a lot of it is being funneled into making perhaps a sort of online offline ecosystem that maybe blends perhaps a bit live servicey in like alarm bell ringing
triggers me.
Like, I don't know, what's this game going to look like? Is it going to have a strictly offline mode and an online mode? Is it going to be a blend of the two, or is it just going to be an online game where there is a narrative that you can play through if you want?
Yeah.
Is it going to be I saw some people saying it might be like almost a play, like adult Roblox, like a playground for user-generated content. Just give people the tools where they can just make these insane mini games and tracks and stuff. Like, who knows what this game is actually going
to be? People already did that with GTA Online. They've already got that freedom to make stuff.
So they could take it to the next logical place. But is there going to be a separation between the single player and the multiplayer?
I also think in terms of edginess, it's not really going to be about the money. I think it's going to be about the culture that we live in now. It's very different to how it was when GTA 5 came out. You could get away with a lot more, I think, and now it's kind of like, even 10 years ago, you know, you could say a lot more than you can now and you wouldn't upset people. But I do think that they're going to have to tread the fine line of being, don't cater to the woke police, but also still making it fun for everyone to play.
it's got to have an edge. It's got that is GTA. It's got to push boundaries, but I think there is a way to do it where it's not completely neutered like the new Saints Row was versus something that actively just goes and attacks minorities for no reason. There is a line, and it's a hard one to walk, but again, without Dan Houser there, I don't know what that's going to look like. What is this going to be? What is this new GTA going to be like? And how is it going to play? $2 billion, if indeed they have that much, they don't even really need to do any marketing at all.
No.
Because everyone knows what GTA is. Mm-hmm. It's still got an insane player base. It makes big money all the time.
And everyone will just play it on YouTube anyway. That's all the free marketing, you know.
Yeah. Everyone will be talking about it on social media. Yeah. It's not going to be bug-free. Let's be realistic. You know, the bigger and more complicated these games get, the harder they are to plan for every. I mean, some games certainly shouldn't be released in the states that they're released in, but you can't always account for every single bug. So it's highly likely that this game is going to launch, and if it has an online component, it's not going to work the first weekend, because that's precisely what happened with GTA Online when that came out in 2013. Didn't work, couldn't get in. Or if you could get in, you got kicked out, and then it forgot what your character looked like, which is not what anyone wants. So at the very least, whatever online functionality there is for this game, you would hope that some of that $2 billion goes towards making sure that the game isn't a stuttery mess at the very least, and also the servers work.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
Some of it, you know, you have to ask about, like, has there been a massive increase in scale as well? And so, you know, if they've, like, doubled or tripled or quadrupled the size of the game physically, like the game world, you know, that immediately eats into a budget, and that money can't go to, you know, things like quality testing and stuff if you're having to spend it on filling a larger space. Mm. I remember
soup.
Mm.
Yeah, lots of soup.
Exactly. I remember some time ago, I've not really been following GTA 6 at the moment because it is all just like, mostly it's just leaks and there's nothing official out there. But I'm sure I saw something a while ago. It might have been just purely someone doing like a fan version of the game saying, oh, this is what I would like to see. Or maybe it was a leak or maybe it was just a lie. But they were saying how it could potentially combine Liberty City, Los Santos and Vice City.
Quite frankly, that's just too much game.
It is, isn't it?
I don't need that. I mean,
that's why I think it's probably a lie.
What if we release
the
ultimate Grand Theft Auto game and never do another one again?
Every map that
could be, that could be their goal. You know, we could be at that stage now where this $2 billion is making the Grand Theft Auto game that they just patch and iterate on
forever. Yeah.
Could be it. Could be looking for their Fortnite, but you know, with blood.
Yeah.
And torture, probably.
Yeah.
As well.
So if they're doing three cities, that's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, cities are expensive, man.
Well, they saved a lot of money when they did the remaster, so they probably got a bit more money.
They did,
and
they probably made a mint off that as well. Mm. Well, it's time to move on to a section we've never done before. It's very exciting. What's it called, Billy? He got it wrong. That was just a string of really problematic statements out of the mouth of Billy.
You can't say that, Billy.
Where he said that. That's incredibly
rude.
It's
called What We Play In.
Right. It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about games. What is happening to me?
Playing.
Thank you.
No problem. Got you back. Peter, what have you been playing this week?
Guys, I'm sorry, but I've only been playing the game of life this week.
Peter, if you don't stop hanging out with your wife and doing adult things,
stay indoors.
You're going to get sacked,
all
right?
No, that's what I have been doing. What?
Exactly. You need to stop that and start playing some games.
Oh, I'm going
to
get... Oh, sorry. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I know. So...
Wordle or something, man.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Fruit Ninja.
Candy Crush.
On Saturday night, I didn't play anything because I went to Ashton's and played the game.
Don't put this
socializing.
On me.
Socializing. Yeah, it's your fault. and since then, I've had the joy, and the day before then as well, I've had the joy of being at war with His Majesty's Revenue and Customs.
Oh, excellent.
For a mistake that they made, and they have now since finally sorted out.
Good.
But I have been chasing them up on and off for 10 months on this. And it sort of, it got...
Well, to be fair, it was his mum's problem.
His
mum died.
He's been going through all the paperwork and
he's
stuff.
Just gotten around to
it. I mean, it almost feels like that actually is what happened because originally, like as I say, 10 months ago, I had this like fine come through that was not legit and it needed fixing. Mm. I appealed it and it went away. And then in April, it suddenly appeared. But not only did it reappear, but because it had originally... existed like months and months ago, it had massive late fees on
it. Oh, excellent.
Like we're talking four figures here.
Oh my god.
So I was like, excuse me. And they were dragging their heels a bit, which is why it's taken like most of my evenings this week. So that's what I've been doing instead of playing video games. But in order to, by way of celebrating the fact that I'm not going to have to give more than £1,000 to King Charles, I have now purchased Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Hooray!
Played it yet. I installed it last night. But so I'm sorry I've not played anything else. I've been played like a fiddle. And that's it.
It's not been long since we last did the podcast, to be
no,
fair.
Yeah, no, well, that as well. Yeah, it's been slightly fewer days since the last one. But that's what I've been doing.
You better have played a game next week, Peter.
I will have done, I promise.
I'll be angry.
Yeah.
I'll text you a list of games you can pretend you played.
Okay.
A little summary of how you found the games.
Spyro the Dragon.
I thought the new Minecraft was bodacious, it says here in my notes.
Yeah.
I played some games this week.
Good.
I have played some more Disney Dreamlight Valley. I'm feeling a bit... I don't want to play that game much anymore because I've had this quest that I just seemingly can't do because I'm waiting for this plant to grow and the plant won't goddamn grow.
Goddamn.
And it's been like 10 days since I planted it and I haven't played every single day, but I was hoping that I'd come back and it'd be like, congrats, the plants.
Well, you did just say earlier that you're not very good at growing plants.
Exactly.
Emily's
so,
flowers died.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm playing that, but not that much. I've been playing some Jedi Survivor still. It's a bit awkward because you have to kind of take it in turns because we've only installed it on one PlayStation. So we're like, oh, I'm at this point now, so it's your turn to play. And I'm at this point now, so it's your turn to play. And I'm still really enjoying that game. But there is a one fracture, which these are little kind of like mini games in the game where you have to do a certain thing, like kill a bunch of enemies or do some annoying parkour. And there's one called Fracture Momentum where you have to use an ability and zip on some zip lines, yeah. And there's electric balls that chase you. Mm-hmm. And I almost did a white man and punch a wall because I was so angry. Ooh. That I couldn't do this.
Specifically white.
You can't do that. That's ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Only we're allowed.
Exactly. I just couldn't do it. And then I had to summon in Ben to try. And
I know exactly the one you're
You know
talking
exactly
about.
What I mean.
It was terrible.
So
was really
annoying.
Hard.
There's like another one that's very similar that you have to do at a certain another point where like something's spinning around and you have to zip through it. Mm. But that one I found annoying.
Yeah.
But that one, the other one, God, it was so much worse.
There's definitely one that's way harder than
yeah,
the other.
Yeah, I felt such rage when I was playing it and I had to summon in MB to
You'll
do
love
it for me.
You
can't wait.
You'll yeah. love it. Just don't do it. Yeah. If you find Fracture Momentum, don't do it. Just leave. Just ignore
just
it.
Leave. Just like call HM Revenue and Customs again. That's far more fun.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I've been playing that. I'm just exploring Kobo. That planet is massive, and when you start unlocking things you're like, oh good, there's even more world to explore. And also I found like one of the abilities that you can get is just kind of in a side area that's not even really marked on a quest or anything, like the little electrical ability that you can get.
Oh yeah,
you can just kind of stumble upon that if you've got
I sort of just assumed that but I can't remember where I found it, but I just assumed that it would sort of like you'd have to go there at some point.
Well, there was one that was like a kind of a rumor, but it was not in that location. And then I just happened to go in that location when I'd unlocked something and I was like, oh, I've got this ability now. Well, cool. And the other thing I've been playing while I have not been playing Jedi Survivor because taking it in turns and being polite, I've been playing some Ravenlock, which went on Game Pass this month. It came out at the beginning of the month, I think. The general consensus of reviews for that was that it's quite short, it's quite easy, it's quite basic, and it's all those things. But I'm enjoying it. I just spam the square button and take out the enemies. It's a little kind of pixely 3D. It's quite pretty. I can't really explain the art style. You kind of just have to look it up because it's quite unique in its art style. And it's kind of an Alice in Wonderland type story. You play a character called Ravenlock and you've got to save the world from the evil queen. And it's good. I'm enjoying it. I've given that a few hours and I'll probably play a bit more tonight. And yeah, I recommend giving that one a go.
I've heard of it, yeah.
If you're looking for something easy and peasy.
Good.
What if I'm just looking for something peasy but not easy?
I still think you might tick some of your boxes.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, like Peter, I very nearly didn't play anything because I did play something. But I nearly didn't because I was going on holiday and I platinumed Jedi Survivor and that was the last game I wanted to sort of get out of the way before I went on holiday. And I had a busy weekend and I kind of just wanted to sit on the sofa and watch television and not actually start a new game. But then it occurred to me, well, I am going to be hungover on Sunday and I don't have much planned on Monday. So maybe I'll see about playing that there Zelda. And I did. And that has been the main thing that I have played. And it's really good. And I am not good at it. That's something I've discovered.
Yep.
Because this is technically my first Zelda game. It's my first ever Zelda game. I've always long since, and probably the same with you guys, because I know you guys aren't huge Zelda fans either, like admired the series from afar, but never really gotten into it. Like I tried Breath of the Wild and it was a bit too expansive for me. And I know this game is way bigger than that, but I really, as I said in a podcast a few months ago, I really want to try and give it a go. So I've played it for maybe 10 hours or thereabouts, and I feel like I've done nothing so far, and I'm dying all the time, but I'll be talking in way more detail about that in a minute in the review corner with James Jenkins, who has actually been playing it properly for us. Apart from that, one thing I forgot to mention that I played the week before was I did finally start a co-op game in Resistance Fall of Man, and I still love that game. And I bet to anyone who doesn't have nostalgic reverence for it, it's crap. Mm. Right. I bet if I played it with someone who didn't play it when it came out or remembered it fondly, it would just be like the most basic first person shooter ever. But to me, you know, I've mentioned it before. You know those bloody glass windows, right? Mm-hmm. You shoot the glass and it splinters. I'm still impressed by that now.
That doesn't happen that often in games. No. Still.
I should have taken a video of it because I was saying to my friend, like, look at this. How good is this? It still looks amazing. The glass splintering, like, depending on where you shoot your bullets. Amazing.
Is there any mirrors in that game?
No, it's sort of like just opaque stuff.
I just wondered because recently when I played Dead Island 2, the mirrors sound reflective.
Played the what?
Dead Island 2.
Oh, yeah, a lot of games don't do that.
Mirrors aren't reflective.
They aren't reflective.
Yeah, but you can see a weapon in it. And I'm always like, well, I'm here.
Show me.
I'm right here.
I'm a real boy.
My idea of that game is that we're vampires. That's why we can't be seen in the mirrors.
And that's why you can't be infected.
Yeah. Also, I have something embarrassing to tell you guys that I forgot to mention.
You want
to
say it on the podcast, yeah?
Yeah. It's about a game. Yeah. Last night, I accidentally spent money on Project Breakover.
You accidentally or
ever.
You did
accidentally.
It?
Accidentally. First time ever. So I can officially not say I've never spent money on it.
Oh, Project Makeover. Makeover. I confused it with Disney Dreamlight Valley.
No. I accidentally spent £3.99 when I was trying to use my Google credit that I've been filling in them surveys to get. And then, and then I tried to use it and it just charged my actual money. Then I was like, no. So now I've spent money on it for the first time. And now I can officially not say that I've never spent money on it.
So before now, have you used Google credit on it before?
No, I've never.
Oh, so this was going to be the first time.
This was my first time
ever. What were you going to buy? What did they sell you in that game?
I was just going to unlock the other path in the, like, you can kind of get a bunch of free stuff. And then they had another path that's like the scenic route. And that's got other stuff on it. So I wanted that.
Like a battle pass.
Yeah.
For dresses.
Not dresses and stuff. Just like... other stuff.
Our
stuff.
What? Like, it's not dresses, other stuff.
Like some of the currencies and stuff that you can use.
How many currencies are there?
There's coins, there's diamonds, and then there's notes.
Notes.
The notes you can spend on your character, the coins you spend on the makeovers, and the diamonds you can use to get extra moves in your game.
They're just like HMRC, they are playing you like a
fiddle. But so I'm really upset that I spent actual money on it.
Gutted. Well, enjoy the scenic route.
I will.
You should make the most of it.
I've got 16 days to do it.
Oh my God. Right. It's time to go to talk to James Jenkins about Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Should we go and do that?
Mm-hmm. Here
we
go. Yes.
Hello and welcome to Review Corner.
We're here.
What are we doing here? What have I done? I've snuck in. I've snuck in here. Hello, Ben.
Hello, James Jenkins. Thank you for joining me in the Review Corner.
Thank you for having me.
There's a big old game that we've got to talk about this week.
This huge, huge game, Zelda.
Yes.
Breath of the Wild 2.
Breath of the Wild 2, that's what it's called. Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. You played it last week on stream, and we've both been playing it a little bit since then. Yeah. Before we go any further, James, this review code was gifted to us by Nintendo.
Oh, no.
So we need to clarify that, as we do every time, per ASA guidelines in the UK, this section is therefore designated as an ad. However, there was no financial compensation. Mm-hmm. We were just given the code for the game to cover for review purposes. So here we are. James, tell me a little about Tears of the Kingdom. What's it about?
Well, it is about a very sad kingdom. No, it's Zelda, Breath of the Wild, but with mega sandbox creative mode jacked up to a million.
Okay.
It's one of the rare instances where it's an actual like direct follow-on from a previous Zelda game. Obviously they like to reinvent the story a lot of times with previous games, but it's very much your standard. You've got Link, there is a Princess Zelda there, and you're fighting a big bad person called Ganon/Ganondorf.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this is set in the same version of Hyrule as the last game, except there is so much more. There's a lot of stuff in the sky, and from what I understand, there's a lot of stuff underground as well, and there's a whole lot of just, as I said before, like, they've reinvented, like, the creativity involved here. So, yeah. Yeah, it's almost like, you know, the training wheels from the previous game are off, mm-hmm. in that you could be very creative with Breath of the Wild, but it was more about that sort of element of exploration and, you know, the quiet bits accentuating the discovery of cool things. Mm-hmm. This feels like it's so much more packed with stuff to do and options for the player, and it's mental. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. How have you found it so far?
I have been a little bit overwhelmed, but mainly mm-hmm. because, as I just said on the podcast a minute ago, this is like my first proper Zelda experience.
Oh boy.
And I didn't really get into Breath of the Wild, yeah. and so I'm giving it a good old try. I'm doing my very best. Good. I've played for a little while. There's some sort of event to give people an idea of kind of the narrative that's going on.
Yeah.
There's some sort of event that happens at the start of the game, mm-hmm. and the kingdom is thrown into chaos. Like, the sky islands appear. Yeah. There's, as you said, there's this, like, deep down below area as well. Mm. There's this awful, nasty stuff all over the place. Monsters yeah. are reigning supreme. And in the midst of the chaos, Princess Zelda has gone missing. And you need to try and find her and work out what's going on. And as you reemerge from also being lost, you communicate with who I assume are characters from the first game who know who I am, but I didn't know who they are because I haven't played it. Yes. And they give you vague instructions about where potentially to start looking for Princess Zelda, and then you've got to go and visit the various locations and kingdoms and try and help them out with their problems and narrow down the mystery and save the day.
Mm. Lovely, lovely stuff. Yeah, it's I should confess that I have not played too much of this new iteration because I didn't finish the previous game, so I'm currently just going through and finishing off. I mean, I'm like halfway through, so mm-hmm. there's a lot to do with Breath of the Wild, but it's been interesting to see the comparison between the new game, having played just the few hours that I have done so far, and see how much creativity is even in those starting bits, mm-hmm. and then going back to Breath of the Wild, because it seems like, you know, for one of the highest rated games of all time when it came out, Breath of the Wild seems so sparse and restrictive compared to what they've added in here.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so, like, seeing the improvements, that's been nice. So I can, mm-hmm. you know, maybe list off a few small notes, because a lot of people who are going to be interested in playing this are probably already playing this right now. Mm-hmm. But for anyone who is maybe concerned about, like, previous issues that turned them off Breath of the Wild, like yourself, might be interesting to sort of cover those things, really, and what they've changed in the new one. So
yeah, so you had the Sheikah Slate in Breath of the Wild, and that had some powers attached to it that you unlocked from shrines that would allow you to navigate the world. There's mm-hmm. a similar aspect to this. Again, don't really want to give away specifics from the start of this game, but you end up with an interesting arm. And your interesting arm gets interesting powers, one of which is have been shown in the pre-release material. You can fly up through the ceilings of caves and, like, through objects above you and emerge, which is very handy for getting, for navigating obstacles.
That's so good.
There's, of course, the Ultra Hand is what it's called, which is the sort of
build mode, basically.
Yeah, it's the good one. It's the good one where you can pick up objects and rotate them and stick them to other objects and so on and so forth.
It's genius.
There's the one Meld, I think it's called, which is when you can attach either objects in your inventory or objects in the environment to your fuse, with weapons and your shield and stuff.
Yeah.
So you can attach things to your arrows and fire bombs at people mm-hmm. or, like, bits of monster parts that you get from killing monsters have different, different
elemental effects.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff.
They do different things.
I attached a flame emitting thing to my shield and created a flamethrower.
Oh my god, it
was amazing.
I did precisely the same thing. And I think actually, because we're recording this review corner after the rest of the podcast has been recorded, sorry to ruin the illusion, and that is actually, so I go on to talk about that in some detail in the next question. Okay. so we'll get to that in a bit. Nice. But yeah, you can do all sorts with that. There's the sort of reverse time or reverse momentum. I can't remember specifically what that's called, but say an object falls down from the sky, you can then hop on top of it, use that power on it, and it will, for a limited amount of time, go back up. You can reverse the flow of machinery that's turning a certain way, so you can hop on it and it can carry you up. So there's all sorts of powers that can be used in conjunction with, you know, building and fusing, and so there's an insane amount of creativity there.
It's blowing my mind. Not only the small amount, again, like that I've played so far, but the things that we've already seen online, on across social media, things that have been built that are just insane. People have built actual mechs. People have built like Trojan horses and hidden inside them and sent them down into a camp. And I think it is incredible how they've managed to do all of these to not only like improve the creativity and like the options that you have to like tackle any of these things, because it's still, you know, as far as I've seen so far, it's still got that amazing element of like freeform discovery, go do whatever you want, but now it's like literally tackle it however you want sort of thing. But it's also, I was going to touch on another point but I've forgotten it, but I will say quality of life changes, like, again, it's, there are like little small things as well, which is very nice to see compared to the old game. So like you can quick access items, so for example with that fuse thing you mentioned, you know, that makes it so much easier, not just to add stuff to your arrows, what have you, but yeah, just to throw things on the ground, for example, or get certain items that you might need, like flint and whatnot. You can replace weapons if you have full inventory, just if you pick something up out of the chest, you're like, oh yeah, you can just quickly replace that. That's nice. There's a lot of little things like recipe books, like the actual, it's easier to find like old recipes and stuff, so you're not googling stuff as I was the other day on Breath of the Wild. But yeah, it's just almost impossible that they've put this much into the game at this point. I feel like it's probably worth touching on how the new game sort of changes things from the previous and what it doesn't change, because, you know, a lot of people had contention with the fact it was so freeform and it felt almost like
a bit overwhelming.
Overwhelming, very little direction there. I feel like there's potentially more stuff here, but I can't speak too much on how it directs things going forward.
I did find that it has given me objective markers on
That's
the map.
Good.
So it's go to that, and then you'll go to that, but then they'll say, well, this is the problem, I'm not really sure what to do. And you're like, okay. And your objective marker is still that person. So then you'll wander over and talk to someone nearby and they'll go, oh, that thing, maybe you should go talk to this person. They're down there, but it doesn't update the objective marker. You've then just got to go down there and try and find them and then come back. So they're, I feel like from someone's perspective who was put off by Breath of the Wild for it being too open, I feel a bit more, there's a bit more direction this time. That's However, good. In places, I did still feel like this goes against, it almost like it goes against my conditioning with video games. Like the objective marker should surely move. But I keep talking to this man and there's nothing new he's saying.
I think, and that's something I had to remind myself with the previous game. It's the objective markers, I point you to like the person who you need to talk to, but then it's also giving you hints to like discover it yourself, and it doesn't point you where it is. You have to sort of follow that. And that's, you're right, it's gone against, you know, again, it's done exactly like Breath of the Wild did, and to an extent Elden Ring as well, in that it's going against a lot of conventional open world tropes and design philosophies and stuff. And that is incredible, but also daunting if, you know, a lot of people just want to sort of switch off and do that sort of thing.
From the perspective of someone who's sort of coming to Zelda for the first time and also wasn't a huge fan of Breath of the Wild for a variety of reasons. Like, it just wasn't for me. There have been a few things that I have noticed that I'm not a big fan of necessarily, or at least that I'm struggling with this game still.
Yeah,
I find the combat quite hard, and not in an entertaining way. I feel like it can sometimes be a complete crapshoot. And mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of button combinations you have to learn to do various things. And the muscle memory for me is not there. And I'm finding that to be a bit of a challenge personally.
Yeah,
particularly when it comes to those stressful combat situations where you've got multiple enemies to fight.
Yeah,
I find that can be really tricky unless I've got a weapon ready to go that's actually any good. The weapon degradation's still there.
Yes.
Not a fan of that.
Yeah, that's actually something else I wanted to touch on as well with the weapon degradation. Yeah, like you say, it's still here. The one thing that apparently does change it is the fuse mechanics can make things last a little bit longer.
Yes,
and
that's
change
something
sort of thing.
That's something I need to do is start fusing more stuff to my weapons.
Yeah, big old boulder sword is great. But yeah, it's honestly a fair point because it's the combat is not the best part, and it is surprisingly tricky. Like, I forgot how difficult it is, and again, it's good in a way that it's almost like encouraging you to try out these other things. So again, like with Fuse, that gives you more options just for the combat. You can build stuff and think outside the box and all that sort of stuff, use various items. But yeah, it's and also recipes as well, improving like different stats and whatnot. But yeah, fundamentally, I feel like that's maybe gone under the radar a little bit, is that all the other Zelda games, like the past Zelda games, aren't difficult. You'd never call them like a challenge in terms of combat, but this is surprisingly tricky.
I have died a lot in combat, and I don't know if it's because I went the wrong direction or what, but you know, I've got slightly more hearts now, but like I had 3 hearts and I was just being one-shotted by things. And like, what am I doing something wrong? Is there something I could be? Because I know there's a parry mechanic and I know that there are mechanics there to help me. But in the heat of the moment where I'm panicking about which combination of L and then ZR that I've got to be holding. Like
I had that as well.
I'm like I panic and I can't react fast enough. And I'm just getting absolutely mulched. Yeah. And then I'm wailing on people with sturdy wooden sticks. Which I know I should be attaching things to, but in the heat of the moment when your weapon breaks, I'm kind of up Flips Creek.
It's weird. I suppose it speaks to a lot of this game, and that, like, you kind of have to reprogram your brain in a way, because again, that's kind of different to previous Zeldas and a lot of other games as well, in that, you know, it just rewrites how you sort of expect to go about games, and it is surprisingly difficult at the start. But yeah, it's...
I'm getting better. I'm getting better at it.
Yeah, that's good.
It's a steep learning curve for me, like a total newbie to this. Like, it's been a steep learning curve. However, that has not affected my enjoyment of the game so far. I think it's obviously a phenomenal video game. Performance-wise, it does stutter from time to time. Like, most of the time, it runs fairly stably, but particularly when you're using the Ultra Hand mechanic to pick up items and then you're rotating, and the game really chugs and it has a hard time with that.
Yeah.
But on the whole, it seems to be running okay.
It's like amazing in that it's got all of these physics things like working in tandem in the background. Like, even when if you think about like the rewind stuff, like they've got all of that programmed to rewind. I think even regular objects, you can, you know, rewind that and it will remember the path that it took.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But yeah, I think it is also fair to say, like, it's, you know, fairly old hardware and it doesn't run super well sometimes. That's just, yeah, maybe a slight downside to this crazy sandbox.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a shame. But yeah, I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying it, especially as like a new player to it. And
yes.
Yeah, like I said, I sort of bounced off of Breath of the Wild and I already feel like I can invest a lot more time into this because the options are insane. It's incredible. Like, you can just, literally the sky's the limit.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, it's incredible. I'm looking forward to actually finishing the last one to play this one some more.
Yes.
That'll be good.
It's a very, very special game. I'm going to take it on holiday with me next week. So I'm going to try and play as much of it as I can and hopefully come back with some more information, more experiences, and maybe I'll actually make something remotely creative and not just like a crappy plank with 4 wheels on it, which has been my go-to.
Plank with four wheels is the best one.
It's the classic. It's like, the classic.
You know, free planks, bridge. That's the way to go.
Simple. Yeah. Simple. Well, thank you, James.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to Nintendo as well. And yes, we're going to head back over to the podcast now.
Goodbye.
Wow. Wasn't that game good?
Is still good.
Yeah. It's time for question two now. Comes from Michael Milan. With Tears of the Kingdom, we know that one, flooding the gaming world right now, it's amazing to see all the insane creations people are creating. But my question is, does the absurd level of freedom come at the cost of atmosphere and narrative? Not that narrative is bad, just that it's less impactful played alongside the Trojan horse built for TikTok. Side question, what's the most absurd thing you've done so far, Ben?
Right, well, because I'm basic as hell, and as I alluded to with my tweet, I can't build anything.
You put four wheels on a plank.
I put four wheels on a plank, but sometimes I put the wheels on and they don't go on right. So it's like, imagine the plank and it's got three wheels in the place you would imagine, and the third one is like at a jaunty angle. Yeah. So it just sort of goes in a tight circle or doesn't move at all. It does look like Homer's barbecue.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't make anything cool in that game. Mm. The only thing I've made so far is a very rudimentary chariot, which is a plank with four wheels on it that I rode down a hill and nearly fell off a cliff.
Right.
I haven't yet got to the point where, because I'm not, right. So this is to focus on Michael's other question about the level of freedom.
Mm.
Generally, without going into any spoilers, you are near the start of the game, you are told, hey, if you want to find out more information, why don't you visit these various locations? And you can go to any of them first. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I picked the wrong one, but I feel like I have bumped into some pretty advanced stuff on my travels, mm-hmm. whether that's me dying in one hit continuously,
mm-hmm.
or that I'm encountering like the components, Zonai devices, I think they're called, that actually power and let you use, you know, create these monstrosities, these beautiful monstrosities. Mm. I'm encountering advanced versions, like advanced components that I've never seen before, and they're not being explained to me. So I did come across two fans that I stapled to the underside of a plank of wood, and then I put a little steering thing on it, and I hit it with my stick to activate the things, and I held onto the steering thing. And it's like when you see someone use those like water jetpack things, you know, that are like where you float along the water,
mm-hmm.
Where they just immediately tilt and then fire directly into the sea.
Yeah,
that's exactly what my device is. And that's as creative as I've attempted to get so far, because I've just been sort of brute force. And this is a valid tactic as well, because you do have the freedom. I've been brute force Skyriming my way up mountains,
right. Yeah.
Like climbing, like, I'm not going to find a sensible way to go up here. I'm not going to build a contraption. I'm going to painstakingly climb all the way up this mountain and find a little ledge to recover my stamina and then keep going. I made a note of it.
Right. Stapled.
I stapled a flame emitter to my shield.
Oh, nice.
Unintentionally.
Right.
But then every time I went to block, I just had a flamethrower shield that burnt everything that came towards me.
That's cool.
That was pretty cool.
Nice.
I like that. I don't feel like I've had enough time to really get into the meat of the creative stuff. But as we talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast, I'm a little worried that maybe the amount of freedom I've got will be wasted on me, because I'm either not going to think of stuff, or I'm not going to know how to do it, or it's just easier and less time consuming to just
not
climb up the mountain, as cool as it is. I just haven't made anything cool yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get back to you on that. I'll try. Make a concerted effort.
After your holiday, I've built a mech suit.
I built the flamethrower penis monster that's been doing the rounds on TikTok. Mm-hmm. We've been doing that one. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really for me and Ashton to say whether it comes at the cost of atmosphere and narrative, given that we've not actually played it. But certainly, like speaking generally, you know, in games that have perhaps similar-ish mechanics, I don't think it necessarily has to come at the cost of atmosphere or narrative, provided it makes sense within the world that people are doing, or that your character is doing that and building stuff. I played that Lego game, I think at start this year or end of last year, where it's just like little cubes of Lego
Builder
worlds.
Or worlds.
Yeah, Lego worlds, was it called? I don't know. And you just have to like build little contraptions to solve little puzzles and stuff. Mm. And, you know, that makes sense in a world of Lego. And stopping and like spending a load of time creating like my own personalized contraption didn't take me out of the game because it was well integrated. So I think there are ways that you can have a game with atmosphere and with some kind of narrative and yet still deviate from that and have moments where you create stuff personally.
Mm. I obviously have not played the game. However, I have noticed that I've not seen really anything like news or tweets or anything about the story of the game.
True.
Like I've not seen anyone be like, wow, the story of this game is really like heartwarming or wow, can't believe this happened in the game. Whereas like, and I'm not, this is not a criticism. Again, I haven't played the game. Calm down, Nintendo fans. I'm not getting at you, I promise. I have just seen a lot from like other games that are very similar in their open world. Obviously they don't give you the ability to make mech suits, but other open world games where it's been like, this side bit is cool, but I'm mainly talking about the game itself and the narrative of the game that is happening. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like I say, I have not really seen anyone talking about it. I've seen like the odd bit from like the person, people I follow being like, oh, I really like this moment in the game, but pretty much everything else has just been, look, I can send this Korok seed into space. And I'm like, cool, that's nice, but what's the game about? What happens in the game? What's the story? I simply don't know. Again, I don't think this creativity necessarily takes away from the atmosphere and narrative. However, I do think that it is an interesting, not experiment per se, but glimpse into it. Because I don't think there's been many games who give this level of creativity and also have an open world story game in it. The only other game that I could keep thinking of is just that it reminds me of Garry's Mod in the sense of like you can just stick things together and make a plane or whatever. But in terms of like actual open world story narrative driven games, I've not seen one that has this level of creativity. And as long as people are enjoying it, I'm sure it's fine. But from an outsider perspective at this point, it looks like people are enjoying the creativity side and the things they can make, but people aren't really discussing the story. Maybe because they've not played the story because they've been too busy making mech suits. Mm, yeah. But, you know, it's interesting to see what the discourse is about online at the moment and how it's not really about the game itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me of, did you play Besiege? Or Besieged? Besiege, no. I think it's called on Steam. It's like an indie game where you just build little siege engines in a very similar way. Like there's like wheels and like hinges and moving parts and stuff, and then you stick like maces on the end and that kind of thing. It's a very similar idea, but not in an open world sandbox. Yeah.
Is it just Cause that's a sandbox game?
Yeah.
Because it reminds, whenever all the stuff I keep seeing, it just reminds me of Just Cause, like being like, I've just made myself a new speedboat, and I'm like, cool.
Nice. I think there's an inherent truth to the fact that people are are far more likely to share the silly stuff.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The stuff that's going to go viral is like, it's the giant flamethrower dick mech, of course. And people are, you know, not everyone, unfortunately, but a lot of people are sensitive to posting spoilers and story beats and stuff like that. I had heard going into this when I was looking at the reviews on the day before release or whenever those came out, that the story was surprisingly affecting this time around, because I think there's always obviously been a story and a narrative at the core of the Zelda games, but I think in Breath of the Wild, perhaps, again, I didn't get very far in it, it was a little more abstract. Like there was a through line, but it was more about the freedom to explore the world and the adventure you were upon, whereas this one felt supposedly a bit more focused. And I will say, having only played really the opening few hours of Breath of the Wild, I much preferred the opening of this one. I thought the way it introduced you to the game and the mechanics, and in particular like the opening bit is just like a full-on narrative linear section, and I thought that was really good, and I am intrigued to see what happens. But obviously there's huge stretches in between where you are wandering through the countryside, either on your horse or on foot. And
or in giant wheels.
Yeah, I was going to say, occasionally there are like little pit stops along the road where just full of materials in case you wanted to build yourself a wagon, for example. So that there are ways to get around. And I think there is something with my time, according to my time with it so far, I would say that the narrative is good and I'm intrigued and interested, and I don't necessarily think that freedom is the freedom to do whatever you want is sort of costing that. I feel like it's to fill in the gaps and to make it feel like more of an adventure between the clearly signposted you need to go here. Like, right. What crazy stuff is Link gonna see between the central area where you start and this city where you've got to go and find out more information about what's happening in the world? You know, there's going to be shrines along the way. I tamed my first horse. Mm-hmm. I took my horse to a stable and registered it and called it Gertrude. And it's not a good horse, but it's my horse. And I didn't have that. If I was just, you know, I wouldn't have had that if I built some sort of mech suit thing to get around, obviously. But I think it complements it nicely, at least so far for me. Like, it's not negatively impacting the narrative in a way. Like, there's still this overall mystery. And I won't know if the mystery is any good until I reach the end of the game, I suppose. But, like, it's a very special game, but it's uniquely Zelda in a way that might be off-putting to some, but is irresistible to others. Mm. And I've only dipped my toe in, but I'm really excited to see more and how it plays out.
Well, you might not have built anything that crazy yourself, but quickfire, what's the most absurd thing you have seen on social media?
The mech suit. Yeah, the usable mech suit was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. I've got to be honest. That's probably the weirdest thing I've seen.
I saw an article of ways that people on social media are torturing the Koroks.
Oh, yeah.
Koroks.
Yeah.
One of them attached a wagon to his horse and then had a crucified Korok attached to it and played the dominate music as he's riding through the countryside.
Did you see the rotisserie?
Saw the rotisserie, like six of them all turning on a spit. Yeah, that was something.
I saw the Trojan horse on TikTok. Did you guys see that?
I've not seen that one yet.
Someone literally just, I don't have the context because I've not played the game, but it looked like there was some sort of enemy camp or something and they were at the top of the hill and they built this horse, giant horse, made of wood with wheels, and then they used the like up warp thing to get up inside this horse, and it began to roll down the hill, and it just wheeled into this camp as it went down the hill and got like past all the
brilliant
monsters at the door. Or
see,
whatever.
That's great, and I do love that stuff. Like, you could, if you wanted to, build a little wagon, load it up with explosives, and then just give it a little push and nudge it down into a camp, and then shoot it with an arrow. You could do that. There's so many creative solutions. My real problem is that, can I be asked to do that when I could just run in and die over and over again?
Yeah.
My favorite thing that I've seen, just because not in and of itself, it's not a particularly crazy thing, but like as a fundamental piece of technology, someone had built like, I think it would be called like a drive wheel or a crankshaft or something, where if you imagine, like a steam engine.
I've seen the video.
Wheel, where they have like the bars going across like different wheels. Mm-hmm. So it's like a wheel with like an arm on it. And as it spins around, it's doing that. And then they've like attached it and made all sorts of different, they've shown like the different uses of it. And the tweet, the caption on the tweet said something like, people in such and such a game are doing this thing, whereas over here in Zelda, we're having the literal industrial revolution. It's like, yeah, really, that's how it works.
Yeah,
you start with things like that.
It always reminds me of like people take out of context moments from games, and they'll be like, "What is this game about? Yeah. Like, what is this game even about?" Just every time I say it, I'm like, "What is this game about? What is happening in this game?"
But it's straightforward enough that anyone can make stuff happen with the tools available, which I think is a real testament. But it feels like Little Big Planet or Dreams all over again for me, where I'm like, I'm crudely, you know, sticking together, just creating these Frankenstein's monster vehicles that barely function. And then there's a guy who makes a steam engine.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't do that.
It is like, Barry's mod, where every single time I would just put four wheels on a bathtub and a chair in it. Yeah. And that's what I would do.
And then it goes.
And a big like rocket thruster on the back.
And then it would just fall over.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Well, if you made one of those, Peter, it would be a little bit odd, wouldn't it?
It would. I might even make the news. It would be weird news.
Oh. Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. If you want to submit weird news to us, you can do so on the post that goes up at the beginning of the week on Twitter and Facebook. And we might give you a shout out right here if we pick your news. However, if you want to guarantee a shout out, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump supporters at a certain tier and become a podcast producer just like
Nathan,
G.Y. Goliath,
Nicole Hanson,
Duncan Wilson,
Katie Garrett /Jared.
Ellie Nicholas,
Nexus Polaris,
Maldi L1A,
Blake Thomas,
and Gabrielle Philipping.
Thank you, podcast producer.
Thank you, podcast producer.
I've got some weird news that was not submitted by anyone.
Again?
There was lots of Zelda news, and we were already covering it, so we didn't want to.
There was a lot of Zelda news this week.
There was a bit of a dearth. Is that the word? Is that a word?
Dirge?
Huh? A dirge.
I think that's a lack of a girth. I think dirge is a lack of something.
Dirge might be the word I was looking for.
Girth.
Not dearth.
A girth.
Not a girth.
You can't just make words up.
Dirge. Let's see. Here we are. A lament for the dead.
What's
a
dearth? D-I-R. Is it I-R? E-R?
Hang on.
We can't move on until we know what dearth means.
How to pronounce dirge? Dearth. Do you mean darth?
No.
I just spelled it wrong. Noun, an inadequate supply. There you go.
A dearth.
I've clearly been misusing dirge this whole time. I've just been using it interchangeably with darth.
Fortunately, PC Gamer came to my rescue. This is written by Rich Stanton. And Rich says, player trash talks 15-year-old opponent at fighting game tournament. The kid's mom incinerates this loser and he backs off while apologizing.
Literally? He burned the child.
I don't think she burned
the child. Flamethrower on her shield.
Yeah.
And
just burns the child alive. Yeah.
That was basically the entire story in a headline. That's 5 lines of text of headline there.
Excellent.
Subheading, never disrespect someone in front of their mother. Low Tide City 2023 was a recent competitive event held over May 13th and 14th in Texas, and among the games being featured were Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. While Nintendo's games have a certain cutesy reputation, which is not undeserved, it's fair to say that the Smash Bros. Competitive scene is where some bonkers stuff happens. People take Kirby's fighting prowess incredibly seriously, and the scene is constantly arguing over one thing or another with regular spats between players. But one player took things too far and woke a sleeping dragon.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. Imagine that sounds also about your mum.
Yeah.
My mum.
So cringe.
Sleeping dragon.
The young player, Syrup, was drawn against Enrique Meister Hernandez in a match for top 8. Meister won the match, and on the way to a third place finish and a gold in the doubles category. But after the win, verbally disrespected his 15-year-old opponent. AITX esports player Jude Jackal Harris posted some DMs from another player describing the incident, and it's alleged that after the match, Meister and Syrup fist bumped, after which Meister told him, "You flipping suck," with a stronger word there.
Wow. Whoa. That seems wholly unnecessary.
Yeah, that's not even trash talk. That's just being mean.
Reaction within the Smash Bros. Community to this was unanimously negative, with many pointing out Syrup's age. "Bro, he's a kid," is a quote.
So Syrup made the top 16? Yeah. Like, you suck, man.
Child.
And the lack of sportsmanship and basic manners from Meister. Meister tried to justify his actions on social media. Yeah. Then Syrup's mom got involved.
Get in there, the sleeping dragon.
Replying to Meister's justifications, which have subsequently been deleted, she said to the player, "As an adult, I think players such as yourself As an adult.
Can you do mum voice?
As an adult,
there she is.
I think players such as yourself have no class, zero sportsmanship. Even if you win, you're still a loser all round, wrote Mrs. Lau.
Damn. Mm.
I have the utmost respect for all players, but you're the low of the low, no doubt. Whoa.
I bet Syrup's like, Mum, please, Mum.
Mum, stop.
Mum, put the camera down.
Needless to say, the crowd went wild. It helped that this past weekend was also Mother's Day in the US, so the replies are almost uniformly congratulating Mom, calling her the goat of mothers and a queen, and pointing out how nice it is to have a parent who supports their kids' interests and one who comes in all guns blazing when someone is a dick to their child.
Yes.
Mm.
Quote, bro got clapped by Mama Syrup. Ran another reaction.
Please, it's Mrs. Syrup.
Yeah.
Adding a crying laugh emoji, while many others thought it was the tournament's highlight. Quote, he got schooled by his mom. LMAO. And we'll just end it there. There's a bit more, but yeah.
Any more O's?
Any more O's?
No more O's.
No more O's, okay.
Nightmare. Damn. I can just imagine he's like, Mom, please don't say anything.
They're writing about me on PC Gamer.
Please stop.
They're talking about me on Triple Jump.
Mama Syrup. I have a PC Gamer article as well by Rich Stanton. Is that who wrote your one as well?
Yeah.
Oh my God, a double Rich.
Is he the new editor for Weird News?
The other one did something good stuff. NFT cockfighting game canned and will buy back your cocks.
Good.
What?
Buy your cocks back.
Why didn't you guys submit this story?
How could such a visionary idea have failed? It was 15 hours ago as well, so it's fresh.
Oh, well, that's why.
Hot and fresh. An NFT-based cockfighting game has been...
I went to school with an NFT cockfighting
game. No, you didn't. Because I did.
Maybe she moved schools. That's been in development for a year, has been unceremoniously canned. Or in the words of its developers, Irreverent Labs entered indefinite hibernation.
Decocked.
Yeah. The game would have starred mecha bots, robotic chickens that were being sold as NFTs to verify each chicken's uniqueness. It was intended to be as a so-called play-to-earn game, where players would level the chickens and theoretically sell them on at a higher price. I'm not making this up. The hype video shows the production values weren't too bad, though as soon as the fighting starts, it's pretty clear the game wouldn't have been a good game. But then the game's cancellation is probably the least bizarre thing about this whole story. The studio behind the game has one of the most irritating websites I've ever used and has pivoted away from NFTs onto a new area of focus, AI.
Good. From dodgy to dodgy.
The bros have jumped ship to the next thing.
All of these squoogles.
So many squoogles. That may seem like swapping one grift for another, but it's even more astonishing in the light of the fact it raised $40 million in private funding to make Mecha Flight Club, disclosed in an SEC filing. At least some of the cash still remains. The one silver lining for fans of Mecha Fight Club, presuming there are any, is that Reverend Labs announced a cancellation alongside a buyback program. And again, I'm not making up, it's called Soul for Cox.
It's not funny.
It is a bit.
Mature, everyone's
really funny.
Sol refers to the popular cryptocurrency Solana, which is currently trading at around $21 per unit, with a buyback offer value each robot chicken at $378. Look, I just work here. Irreverent Labs' official statement on what's happened reads as equal parts misleading and delusional. It also says absolutely everything about the corner of the industry that the first two pages of four are dedicated to the risk of scams around Sulfur Cox, before going on to moan about those pesky regulators and how they make the NFT cockfighting dream impossible. The theme, culture, art, story, and underpinning goals of MFC remain with us, but we can't continue to develop it as a blockchain game, says Irreverent Labs.
More like cockchain.
Nice. Unfortunately, the regulatory and operations environment around the blockchain within the USA have drastically changed in the last 2 years. We're an American company, and a lack of clarity is making it difficult for blockchain companies to operate here.
Oh, that's so sad.
In the current regulatory confusion...
Cock-blocked.
We simply couldn't create an in-game economy without concern about the regulatory ramifications. We have no way to know how long this will continue or when it will get better. We simply can't ask you to wait any longer.
Mm, done.
So there we have it. They're buying back your cocks, though. Mm, so if you've got a cock...
And you don't want it anymore?
If you recently purchased a cock...
They'll give you $378 for your cock.
I wonder what YouTube's going to make of that conversation.
Mm. Yeah.
We'll find out.
We're talking about chickens, YouTube.
Yeah.
Cockerels.
Cock-a-doodle-doo, if you will.
My weird news comes from JohnnyMac13 on Twitter. And it's from a website called GamesRadar Plus.
Whoa. Plus what?
I don't know. It doesn't say. Premium There's just a little version. British flag there. Mm. That's the language I've selected. It's written by Hiron Cryer.
Are you sure it's? I think it is a plus, and it's not just the Union Jack.
Yeah.
Games Radar.
England.
There.
God save the King.
Plus. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. No. The Elden Ring streamer playing with her brainwaves doesn't even need a controller anymore. It says.
Huh?
She's just built different. Is the subtitle.
Is she a robot? Is she an AI?
No, she's real. An Elden Ring streamer is playing From Software's game completely hands-free. Not quite satisfying.
What? Neither of those words.
Oh, it would have worked, I think.
Yeah. Or has played.
Not quite satisfied with beating Elden Ring with the power of their mind, streamer Pericariol is now taking on From Software's latest without even using their hands. Footage of the monumental feat can be seen just below in the streamer's tweet, where they showcase a fight against the Soldier of Godric boss entirely hands-free. So previously, they had completed a playthrough where they still needed to use a controller to move, but they were using their brain to attack.
How though?
But just brain powers. You know?
How though?
Just little measuring. You measure the brain waves and go like that, and then does an attack, maybe.
I don't believe it.
I'm not sure.
I don't believe it.
The Twitch streamer looks to be using their head to dodge to the left or right, tilting their head ever so slightly to circumvent the boss's attacks.
Well, that's not moving your brainwaves then, is it? If you're using your head, that's just motion controls.
The attacking and movement of their character, though, looks to be left entirely to the power of their mind, Ashton Matthews, meaning there's been a big upgrade on Pericariol's setup since their last feat. When the streamer previously beat Elden Ring using their mind, they could only use their brainwaves to attack, as movement was still bound as a controller to a controller analog stick. We're not honestly sure where we go from here. How can anyone play a From Software game in a stranger way than with their brain? Mm. We've seen a streamer beat every Elden Ring boss using a Boffit controller, so we're not exactly sure on the weirdness factor around here. On the weirdness factor around here, but who knows how the entire thing could escalate from here.
I think you should stick stuff to your bum, and if you like tense your bum muscles, then you attack.
Then you what?
I'd watch that.
You just attack.
Yeah.
You just have to clench.
Clutch. Well, maybe if you do the left cheek, you go left, and the right cheek, you go right.
Rather than Dark Souls, could they do Bloodborne and just call it like Bumborne?
Bumborne, yeah. Blood bum.
Blood butt. Oh, no.
No. No, I don't like that one.
I don't believe it.
It's true.
It's true. I'm afraid there's a news article written very well about it, and so it's real.
But I don't understand it.
No, I don't. Well, she probably explains it in more detail if you wanted to know. You don't really want to know, though, do you?
I can think of a weird way to play FromSoft games. Remember when you know how people have sometimes had like goldfish swimming around like tanks?
Oh yeah, that guy whose goldfish like made a purchase on the
like that one. If you got a fish that like moved a lot very quickly and is constantly swimming around its tank,
a very stressed fish,
and in each area is a button prompt. If you just left it playing like the same fight for hours and hours or days and days and days, eventually it would win one round.
I think we should make the sea lions from last week play Elden Ring.
Yeah.
That would be weirder. The Navy SEALs have beat Elden Ring.
They're going to love it. It's an exciting time.
But the dolphins want the TV this evening because they like SpongeBob.
They want to watch SpongeBob.
I want to see... You remember the Old Spice advert? We don't have Old Spice in the UK, but we've all seen the advert with Terry Crews where he's like got all the sensors up to his muscles and he plays like a drum kit by tensing all his muscles.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him play Elden Ring that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that would be really
interesting. A few on his bum cheeks as well.
Sure. Yeah. If the bum cheeks have to be involved, then yeah.
Well, may as well. If you're there.
Be a wasted muscle, wouldn't it? You know what I mean? So, right. It's time for the big discussion. Ooh. Big discussion time. This week's big discussion comes courtesy of Cameron Keywood, who says, "Hey, Bap, some Tears of the Kingdom players are disappointed with the lack of accessibility options. Why is Nintendo lagging behind Sony and Microsoft in advancing accessibility in games? From AAA to indie studios, there is growing focus on ensuring that games are accessible to as many players as possible. Microsoft's Xbox Adaptive Controller is specifically designed for gamers with limited mobility, and even first-party titles like Forza Horizon now offer a range of accessibility options. Sony's Horizon Forbidden West has even been updated with features to assist those with phobias. Back in 2019, games journalist Jason Schreier raised concerns with Zelda producer Eiji Onuma about the lack of button remapping in Breath of the Wild. Schreier highlighted that disabled players may not be able to play the game in the intended way, to which Onuma acknowledged the point and promised to consider it in the future. However, it appears that the development team did not follow through on this commitment with the release of Tears of the Kingdom. Ashton,
yeah,
you had the pleasure of posting this big discussion in the always rational, always welcoming and lovely YouTube community tab.
Yeah.
You waded through a lot of filth.
Oh, boy. There was a lot.
Some people willfully misunderstood.
Some people just didn't understand.
Yeah. Some people did understand and got really cross because
someone said
it was considered an attack on Nintendo, even though we just want to talk about accessibility for disabled gamers.
Someone called a 30-year-old person who is colorblind. They said that that's mad gay. So
they're now banned from the channel.
They're now banned from the channel.
But that's the sort of level of discourse that happens in the community
That's
tab.
What I've got to wade through on a Wednesday, Thursday
those
morning.
Those of you who see the post go up in the community tab on YouTube, we may pick your interaction for here, but thank you to those of you who are thank you for those few of you who are like rational and normal human beings.
If you see the post go up and go, oh, there's already like 15-20 comments that probably won't pick me now, like, no, don't worry,
guarantee a lot of those are just very hateful, so that's fine.
Some people didn't understand what accessibility meant. People thought that, oh, you're talking about whether it's accessible if you've not played the first game. Some people were discussing whether it's because it's only available on one console, so it's not accessible to the wide variety of people. And then people were correcting them about what it really meant. That's when people actually started to figure out that I meant accessibility in terms of for those of people with disabilities, not, you know.
Why are they so cross, though? I'm always in awe.
I don't know why I'm
wildly angry these people get for seemingly very little reason.
Yeah. But I picked a few that were good. Nathaniel said, accessibility features like Naughty Dog's implemented for Last of Us 2 should be industry standard. No one should be kept from trying to play a game because of colorblindness or other disabilities. Obviously, The Last of Us 2 had, like, amazing accessibility. Someone said, I am blind in one eye and Nintendo games are far more playable for me than those on PlayStation, and I don't know about Xbox. Then someone who is blind, who again had received a lot of hate just for being blind.
Just for being blind. Said,
as a completely blind gamer, I can certainly say that this year for accessibility has been a huge boost. Even developers making voiceover mods for several different games, as far as Nintendo goes, still yet to see it. No pun intended. Very good.
That's great.
And then Fred Flintstone off of the
Whoa. Hang on.
This is huge. Hang on.
Please,
is he verified?
He says, don't ban him.
He's not banned. He's got 5 subscribers.
He said, what is video game?
Yeah. He said, yabba dabba doo.
I like big meat and rocks.
He said, while Nintendo games may not be accessible as, let's say, Xbox, it's more accessible in many other ways. There are a ton of different controllers that we can use for Switch. It's portable so people can play how and where and whatever body position is more comfortable for them. Also, they have added some options to make games easier, like in DK for the Switch compared to the Wii U version, Mario Odyssey where you can give yourself twice the health and it also regenerates. Then there's the amiibos that add extra stuff to the games that also make them a little easier. So we can't say Nintendo isn't doing anything. Personally, for me, if given the difficulty option, I usually choose easy on my first playthrough and the second one on a higher difficulty. However, I enjoy games even when not given a difficulty option, and the only way to make the game easier is to do more side quests and exploring, like in the Zelda games. And then lastly, the one I wanted to bring up is by Pierce, who...
Pierce. Did you say Pierce?
Pierce.
Okay.
Sorry,
Pierce.
Jesus Christ. Nintendo seems to have remained a silo of its own, while Sony and Microsoft have remained in closer competition and also pushed accessibility strides in one another. While the exceptional position that has historically been good for Nintendo's stability as a business, they definitely don't seem to have adapted to accommodating accessibility with the same focus that the other two companies have taken towards it, which they're out of touch with where expectations are now. As rising tide lifts all ships and Nintendo being closed off from those effects is more noticeable now, especially when we don't see the same sort of consideration during the development process that we have from other first-party developers. I'm curious how much of this is from Japanese software development industry side of things versus just from Nintendo, since Sony's first-party titles with a higher accessibility also have a more global presence. And then they've put, as someone who works whose work's doing accessibility QA and software development, Japanese business culture seems like getting the foothold and leverage would be a very difficult ball game compared to those in companies in the EU and North America. So there we have it.
Very interesting points. Thank you, everyone, for those. I do wonder if it's more just a Japanese versus Western culture thing, because PlayStation and Microsoft are so good with this stuff, and it's getting better every single year. But a lot of those games are coming from Western studios.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, what I want to know is, why don't all games just sort of say the word database all the way through?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, Dead Space is, for those the uninitiated, we did a Dead Space remake playthrough and we put on the audio description and it was completely broken. Like, we put it on initially just to see what it was like, and then we kept it on the whole time because it was so comedically terrible.
Useless.
It was mispronouncing words like to the point where you couldn't really understand what it was even saying, because it was all synthesized. And then it just kept saying...
And then it would get stuck on one word.
It just kept saying database every single time.
Also, wouldn't read any like of the information you picked up. No. So if you picked up like a diary entry or whatever, you wouldn't read that out.
So it was baffling. It was so baffling that we wondered aloud several times if it was actually... if there was a reason it was like this, like for a very specific type of disability, that it might be beneficial, but
it's broken.
We didn't understand.
I brought some stats along, actually, to give some context here as well. So according to 3playmedi.com, more than 216 million people in the US play video games regularly. And of the Americans that play video games, 46 million have one or more disabilities. That's 21%. Now, that's not to say that all of those people require... accessibility options, but I also have some stats from scope.org.uk here. 66% of gamers with an impairment or condition say they face barriers or issues related to gaming. The biggest barrier to gaming is actually the affordability of suitable assistive or adaptive technology. The most used assistive technologies are sounds options or adjusting the sensitivity of controllers. 50% of disabled gamers say that information on accessibility of a game has affected their decision to buy it. 40% have bought games they haven't been able to play due to poor accessibility, and 40% of gamers have experienced negative attitudes from other gamers, as demonstrated by the community tab, relating to a disability, impairment, or condition. So, you know, that's an awful lot of people who deserve to have the options there that make these games accessible to them and allow them to play them and enjoy them in the same way as other people. You know, there's obviously, from very much playing devil's advocate here, there's an argument that some people would make to say, it's going to cost money to implement these things. And are some of these mega corporations, do they care enough to make these options available to people who need them when compared with, you know, how much it's going to cost them to do so? Are they concerned with the loss of sales from this, for example, 40% of disabled gamers who haven't been able to play a game due to accessibility? Do they care enough about that to kind of offset the loss and try and bring those people in by making the options available? I'd like to think that the world doesn't quite work based purely on, you know, balancing the books, and that, you know, some of these things are going to be included in games just for the sake of those players, and it's not going to be a concern about money. But
there's a PR aspect as well. Like,
yeah, that, 100%. That's always what I mean. Yeah,
that will always play out in the end. You may not see a huge surge in sales because a disabled sect of your audience can now play your game properly.
Yeah,
but certainly the goodwill generated by that will always be beneficial.
Yeah, 100%. I also think that, like, unfortunately, like you say, it's going to cost money. But also, if you, PR again, if you've got a company that you see as like, well, they care about disabled gamers, or they care about people who can't play their games to 100%, then that's just nice to see. And it's nice to know that, like, okay, maybe it's going to cost you a bit more money, but it gives those 40% of gamers, or 21% of gamers, the ability to play a game that they're interested in. Mm-hmm. Like The Last of Us came out and it looked amazing with the accessibility issues. Yeah. God of War recently had very similar accessibility features as
Redfall
well.
Redfall had loads.
Even like, you know, it's a thing that you don't have to include, but in including it, it just makes your game more accessible to everyone else, and it just gives people the option to adjust things should they wish. Sometimes I just turn on accessibility features, I adjust things to make the game easier for me.
You had one or two on.
Yeah, I did it in Star Wars. I did it in Star Wars and Resi 4. I turned on a couple of it just to make the game more fun.
Yeah,
I
think. Exactly.
I've been told one about Star Wars that, in fact, I think we talked about
the falling
about it in
off
previous,
the cliffs one and taking damage.
And there's also a navigation assist that I highly suggest adding on because it tells you which way is the right way to go, which is very useful. Yeah. But I think that maybe, like you say, it is a culture thing. Mm. Maybe this is just that, like, and now in our Western culture, we're much more aware of people's needs and there's a lot more discourse about it and people who are actively advocating for these accessibility options, whereas maybe these are not the case in, you know, around the Nintendo bubble, and in Japan it's not as talked about potentially.
It could be like a matter of pride as well in terms of wanting to put out a particular experience and seeing any, this is absurd of course and has obviously been debunked by the rise of accessibility features in Western games and it not impacting the experience for you know, people who want to play it without those features enabled. But like, it could be that the Japanese developers, there is a sense of pride almost stuck in your ways-ishness about it, like, this is the game that we want to release and this is how it needs to be played, and any way that you could alter that to potentially give yourself an advantage is like sacrilege in the view of our vision or whatever.
Like, not every games company and not every game that is coming out at the moment is perfect for accessibility. A lot of people were commenting on the community tab about FromSoft games and about their level of accessibility isn't actually that high either. They can sometimes be very difficult for people to get into. And obviously there was the whole discourse about the controllers, which is great because, like I say, Nintendo does have lots of controllers, third party and otherwise. But they've never specifically said or release something like Xbox have with, this is our accessibility controller. And also PlayStation recently released or are going to release,
I think they've been working on something,
a controller. But in terms of Zelda specifically, Cameron attached a link to a video, and most of the issues were things like there'll be a side quest where you had to listen to sound cues and there was no alternative. If you couldn't hear the sound, that's it, you couldn't hear it.
Got some notes.
Do you want to?
So this is a video from Laura K. Buzz, sort of an accessibility review. I will say that some of the points that she raised just sounded like general criticisms with the game rather than actual accessibility problems. But in terms of, the bad one, there's the audio location puzzles with like next to no visual cues. So you can brute force a solution by just running around and trying to. But if you have hearing issues, you're going to really struggle with that. The HUD can be tweaked, but can't be made any bigger. There are sections of the game that are extremely dark by design, and there are items that will help brighten that up, but there's not a lot to help people who would, who struggle with
seeing it
with eyesight. Exactly, and that would be a huge issue for them. But there are some positives as well. They got rid of the motion control mandatory bits from Breath of the Wild. There are a couple of those. They're now gone. And this is something I've noticed as well, as someone who is terrible at the game, is that autosaves, are extremely generous. It autosaves pretty much constantly whenever you're about to enter combat. And you can put a manual save wherever you want as well. So if you're about to go fight something or you're about to attempt a jump, you can then reload. So there are some things they've added, but I will say that the first thing I did was go into the settings and I was kind of shocked at, I'm so used to there just being this laundry list and then tabs of different settings. And I was very surprised by the lack of settings available. It's tough to say because none of us need to make use of these features, but it goes without saying, I mean that our community tab would suggest otherwise, unfortunately, but I think it should go without saying that everyone deserves to be able to play games in the way that is most comfortable for
them. I will
say
that there was a lot of people that were saying that, like, these things should be implemented.
That's
and
good.
It is a positive thing.
The bad ones
there was
that
just
stick out.
The vocal minority are very loud on the community tab. So I agree. I think that, like, a lot of modern gamers who are kind of plugged in to what's going on, I think would be more on, if someone told them, like, oh, I can't actually play the game because I can't hear and there's some puzzles I can't do, I think that would trigger people in a way to be like, well, that's not good. Like, that's not how it should work. And I think a lot of people could really appreciate when accessibility features are added into games. And like you say, going into the settings and not seeing that long laundry list is always kind of weird. There's been games where I've struggled to see the HUD on my TV and I'd rather it was turned up, but I literally can't. And that always drives me mental. And I have not perfect vision, but I have eyes that work pretty well. So I do always think like, oh, well, this isn't great because I can't see the subtitles. So how is someone else going to see it if they're, you know, disabled?
I was going to say, I'm sure there was a game not so long ago in the past, maybe 6 months, that released and there was like an issue with the subtitles where they were either like not available in cutscenes or not available in like with the kind of everyday chatter that happens during gameplay. I can't remember what game it was. But yeah, I remember that being kind of like there's no reason these days for a game to not at least have subtitles in terms of accessibility. Yeah.
Tears of the Kingdom is a phenomenal video game and will be probably the highest rated release of the entire year.
Yeah.
It's going to win all the awards.
It's going to win all the awards and it's going to be considered, when we look back, as one of the best games of all time, right next to Breath of the Wild. And it's a shame that more people can't play it. And everyone deserves the chance to be able to play this amazing game. So hopefully I don't think Nintendo are probably going to add anything, but the more we talk about it and the more we promote it, hopefully, you know, the conversation will actually fall on ears at Nintendo, where next time we'll be able to get something that more people can play these games comfortably and change the settings to allow them to experience the game the way that they would like to experience it.
Yeah, and there's some really good disabled content, gaming content creators out there that you should definitely check out and see what they have to say about the game. Obviously, we're all able-bodied people, so we've got our opinions, but it's best to listen to those that are affected. So there's plenty of people out there that are some big names and some small names as well, so check those out and see what they have to say.
I guess one more point uplift their voices. Which is that at least with PC games, if there are lacking accessibility options, it's probably easier to mod them in, whereas something like a Switch, it's not going to be so easy for the community to say, well, all right, we'll do it then. So that's another reason why Nintendo, of all people, and Sony should be on it more than perhaps Microsoft need to be, or as far as PC games go anyway.
Well, of course, let us know what you think of everything we've discussed in the comments below. Keep it clean, keep it tidy.
We hope you're kind and understanding. Right.
We hope you're all enjoying Tears of the Kingdom. We know a lot of you are. And Peter is going to tell you where you can find us on the internet and how you can support us if you want to.
Yes, we are at youtube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. We do videos on YouTube, live streams on Twitch, and occasionally we might do a live stream on YouTube as well for big special events. If you've got Amazon Prime, part of the bundle that you're already paying for involves or includes a Twitch sub that you can spend on us at no extra cost. So go and consider doing that. And when we are streaming on Twitch, we are modded by Lob Brotovich, Trialing Badger, and Mr. Black. We are also on twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump. You can go to those to see video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, highlights of the week from Twitch, bits of weird news, all sorts of things put there by Fraser and the three of us as well. TikTok.com/@TeamTripleJump for Ashton's TikToks, and Patreon.com/TeamTripleJump for lots of different tiers on Patreon with lots of different rewards within them. So have a look at them and decide which one you might like to sign up to, if any.
We have a website. It's jubblju.mp, spells jump, it's very clever. And if you want to join our Discord, jubblju.mup/Discord, chat with our wonderful community. Over there, we're modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollow Eyes. And if you say to do something, bloody well do it, all right? No weird pictures on there, you bunch of weirdos. If you'd like to listen to the podcast in its audio form, why not go to jubblju.mup/podcast. And to catch up on any of our live stream VODs, go to jubblju.mup/VODs. To book any of us three and James Jenkins on Cameo, go to jubblju.mup/Cameo. And to buy some sick and cool merch, like these hoodies, I don't know if that's still available.
Sure. Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
Logo shirts.
Go to jubblejumpshop.com and make sure you're following @jubblejumpshop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements. And tag us when you get your merch.
Yeah.
We'd like to see you guys.
Yeah, let us know. Why not follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter at ThatPeterAustin and at ScrambledAshton, and myself just on Twitter at Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
All on Twitch. It's all on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. Weirdest Games is monthly, a week early for patrons. The After Dark podcast is fortnightly on Monday for patrons. The podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows all the bloody time. Come and check them out. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. We'd really appreciate it, and it doesn't cost you anything. A couple of videos out on the channel this week beyond the usual. It's weird in here, is it not? Someone, hello?
So weird.
It's Weirdest Games.
Yes.
Yeah.
You said couple, and I only had one listed, so I had one. Oh, okay. It's a Weirdest Games Ever week this week. It comes out tomorrow at time of release, so check that one out. It's a pretty good one, I would say. Mm-hmm. Kieran said it was one of his favourites.
Oh.
And it's not even sexy, so that's really saying something. Not even
sexy, no. There was a woman in it.
There was. It was pretty saucy dope, woman.
It's yeah. True. She had a voice and everything.
That's the closest it got.
Yeah. Mm.
And the other video, assuming I've managed to finish it, fingers crossed, is playing every PlayStation Vita launch title in 2023. I've been working on this video for bloody ages because it took ages to get all the games, and then I've been chipping away at it. I'm very excited to show it to you. I've been working very hard on it. There's a cool guest in the intro that I'm excited for you to see. And if it doesn't get 6 million views, I'll cry. So
also, I've watched a chunk of it, and it's pretty good. I enjoyed what you did with it.
Thank you very much.
Have you watched? Is it on the back end?
No.
I asked for a second opinion because I was second.
He's trying something new with it, and it's
yeah.
It's
I was
good.
Second guessing myself,
right.
So I just wanted some critiquing from someone from a fresh set of eyes.
Fair.
I'm going to send you some more today. So okay. You can watch the rest.
Exciting.
Let me know. Excellent. Thank you so much for watching, everybody. Peter's going to tell you about a sponsor again.
Hey, do you want to see the guy from Spider-Man weeping? You can play The Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingpin.
There it is.
Excellent. Look after yourselves, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.